Today we are embarking on a new series called Holy Risk. And so in this series, we're looking at different aspects of the life of faith that can feel risky, can make us feel vulnerable. And so today we're going to explore a little together the risk of friendship. And so to do that, we're going to look at a story from, or it's really not even a story, but a snippet, a snapshot of David and Jonathan, and this takes place in the book of 1 Samuel. It takes place right on the heels of the story of David's triumph over Goliath. And so just after that, here is what happens. The 18th chapter, beginning in the first verse. When David had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was bound to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that he was wearing and gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and bow and his belt. David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him. As a result, Saul set him over the army, and all the people, even the servants of Saul, approved. This is the word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. So in the United Methodist tradition, we are a conferencing people. And so we often have gatherings, and one of those gatherings that we engage in is called annual conference. We'll be sending some folks to go to annual conference a little later this summer, mid-June. It is a huge gathering that represents, in our case, it's the eastern half of North Carolina. And you'll have clergy from local churches as well as lay members from local churches. And it's literally thousands of people. We typically meet in Greenville at the convention center. And I remember one year, I don't know what happened. I think I must have slipped in a little late. I was sitting by myself, and the conference broke for lunch. And I was like, oh gosh, I wonder who I'm going to eat with today. And so I look over, I see some friends, and I was like, hey, what are y'all doing? Oh, we got this thing we already arranged. Sorry. Shoot. And look over some different friends. What are y'all doing? Yeah, we got this thing. And sort of started to watch all these people go together in seemingly prearranged configurations. And I had this voice inside of my head that just said, you are such a loser. You are with thousands of people and you're going to go eat lunch by yourself. And I really was having a bit of a pity party, just sitting there wondering what a colossal waste of humanity I was. And then I felt this tap on my elbow, and it was a friend that said, hey, what are you doing? You want to go to lunch? And I was like, I don't know, maybe. And inside, I was like, thank you, Lord. I needed this. I needed the win. I think sometimes the worst kind of loneliness is loneliness that happens in the sea of humanity. When you're surrounded by people, but you can't see a friend to connect with for all the people around you. I wonder if that's not how David felt initially in this moment. He had just had this heroic moment, of course. He had just fought Goliath. He'd had a great victory. Things looked really good, but you know, you got to remember, David wasn't used to all this. David was from Bethlehem, a small little village, and David was he had been a shepherd. He'd been out in the fields tending to sheep. He wasn't used to being in these big crowds of people. And sure, he had a great victory, but once the victory was over, Saul looked at him. As I read a second ago, Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Now, Bethlehem was only like 6 miles from Gibeah, where Saul's kingdom had its headquarters, but you could not imagine a place farther away, culturally speaking. David would have known none of the courtly rituals. He would have had no clue about the politics behind the throne. And so he also had just done something that all of Saul's advisors and everyone in Israel had not done. Goliath had been taunting people, and none of the military leaders answered and rose to answer Goliath's challenge. So you know people were looking at him jealously. You know some of those advisors who said, oh, sure, Saul, you should bring him on, were saying, yeah, bring him on. Let's keep our enemies close. There certainly was jealousy, and probably nobody had more right to be jealous and or threatened by David than Jonathan. He had been a military leader. He had already had, at this point, multiple victories and big campaigns under Saul. And he, of course, was Saul's son. He was the one who was in line to take over things for Saul. If anybody should have been placed over military, it should have been Jonathan. But here comes David, who's placed over soldiers. Here comes David, and people start to whisper, hey, this guy's pretty good. Maybe he should be the king. Maybe he should be the king. That was Jonathan's job. Jonathan was next in line for the throne. But Jonathan doesn't count the cost. Jonathan doesn't look at David and see a threat. Jonathan sees a friend. Jonathan sees a friend. Now, I'm a child of the 1980s, and so I grew up in an age where parents thought it was a good idea for their children to watch a sitcom set in a bar. Cheers. I mean, I kind of grew up feeling like those were my friends. I don't know about y'all, but genuinely, like, you know, if Carla were to walk in the door right now, I'd give her a one-liner. And if Sam said something, I would tell him that was really immature and he shouldn't do that. And if Cliff said something, I would just laugh at the idiot savant. And if Norm were to walk into this room, what would we all do? We'd go, Norm, right? And he'd head over he'd sit up here and then he'd have a one-liner. We'd say, how you doing, Norm? He'd say, it's a dog-eat-dog world and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear. And you know, we'd see these people. I don't know about you, but you see these people and it feels like you've got a friendship. But it's not. It's the veneer of friendship. And yet there's something really appealing about it. Because when you feel like Norm is your best friend, it's really nice because Norm doesn't ask a thing of you. Norm doesn't ask a thing of you. It's not real friendship because there's not mutuality. But there's something kind of appealing about that. Why? Because it's kind of nice to not feel like somebody's going to ask you to do something you don't want to do. It's kind of nice to not have a friend that's going to want to hang out at a place you don't want to go, or a friend that wants to go to a restaurant where the food you don't like as much, or a friend that wants you to hang out when you've got homework, or a friend that wants you to go to a sporting event when you have something else to do. But you know, real friendship rests on mutuality. You can't have a real friend unless that friend from time to time asks something of you and you offer something to your friend. That's what David and Jonathan have. David and Jonathan have a mutuality, a give and take. They have a real friendship that rests on what they offer each other and receive from each other. You know, Jonathan literally protects David's life. As Saul, who rightly sees David as a threat, Saul's a savvy king. He knows that when people are saying that, you know, David should be king, he knows that's a threat. He knows what they're saying, and he wants to get rid of him. But time and time again, Jonathan intervenes. He helps him. When Saul gets angry, Jonathan tips him off. There's even a point where David's like out hiding in the field, waiting for Jonathan to shoot arrows. And if they go to one side of a rock, it means one thing. If they go to the other side of the rock, it means another. We need a sense of give and take for friendship to be real. It can't just be about a one-sided thing. Oh, I received this. That's a veneer of friendship. Real friendship depends on mutuality. Now, this scene that we get this snapshot of in the 18th chapter of 1 Samuel, there's that a little bit of armor reference in this scene, right? There's also a reference of armor in the scene that precedes it. And those of you who remember the story of David and Goliath probably remember this part of it, where David has just kind of made the declaration that he feels like he is the one to take out Goliath. And Saul finally accepts David as the one who may so do. And he says, if you're going to do it, though, why don't you go out with the best chance of success? Here is my armor. And he has his armor bearer put Saul's armor onto David. And David's got it all on, and it just is not working for him. He's like, Saul, can't do it. here. I'm taking all this off. He takes all this armor off, drops the sword that Saul had given him, and he goes and he picks up five smooth stones and his sling, and he heads out into the field to meet Goliath as himself. Then you flash forward to the part that I just read a minute ago. And what does Jonathan do when he is trying to make a covenant with David, a friendship that'll span their life? He literally takes off his armor. He removes his armor and hands it to his friend. What a powerful symbol of what friendship is really about. Having the courage to remove our armor. The courage to remove our armor. It exposes something that's really vulnerable, because when we remove our image, when we set aside the way we project in public and allow ourselves to show our real identity, it's scary. We kind of put ourselves in a position to say, well, what if they don't like me? What if I show them who I am and they don't like me? Or what if they challenge me? What if they say, hey, you know, that's not going well? It's scary. It's really scary to remove our armor. I think it's culturally just one of those things that we continue to grapple with. Think about this. How many of you, if you had like a, you know, a medical issue like on your belly or something, how many of you would feel more comfortable lifting up your shirt and showing your belly to a medical professional, or having your friend, hey, check this out, and just lift it up? Most of us probably are going to a medical professional, right? How many of you, if you've got like a something that really was embarrassing that happened, how many of you are going to feel more comfortable telling a therapist who is under law to not divulge your secrets, or tell your friend? It's a little scarier to process something really embarrassing with a friend. How many of you would feel more comfortable having, let's say you've gone a month without being able to clean your place, and how many of you would be more comfortable having a housekeeper come over who you might never see again? Or your best friend on their knees scrubbing your toilet? Most of us are gonna go housekeeper, and in fact, I know some of you who occasionally have a housekeeper that you will clean your house before the housekeeper gets there. I'm not wrong. Being vulnerable is hard. Being real is hard. But you know, when we open ourselves up to be our real selves, I am not sure that there's anything more just joyful in the world than to show your real self to someone and have them love you. Often because of you, and sometimes in spite of you. To have that love when you really show who you are is incredible. Now, like, there's a literalness for David and Jonathan as they're shedding that armor with each other. For them, if you don't have armor on and you're in a military situation in that day, you are literally at risk of being vulnerable physically, of having a sword hit you. And spiritually speaking, when we are vulnerable, when we really are being real with each other, it begs this question: what if I get hurt? What if something happens and I'm real with someone, I'm a real friend, and they let me down? Or what if they hurt me? Or what if I lose them? What if we become friends and then they have to move, or they die? And it's hard. It's hard. We have to ask ourselves real questions. So we offer ourselves in all vulnerability to others. But one thing we've got to remember is that all human relationships are subordinate. They're all subordinate to our relationship with God. God is the only being that doesn't disappoint. Everyone else is human. So all of our relationships, if we're real with them, eventually there will be something that lets us down or hurts. There'll be hurt in every relationship we have. But what we do is we see that and we acknowledge it and we go on with friendship anyway. We go on anyway. Jonathan, goodness gracious, consider the grief that he underwent as he was protecting David. His own dad was trying to kill David and he would jump in and intervene. And at one point, his own father got so mad at him that his father Saul chucked a spear right at him, hoping to take him out. Can you imagine the depth of grief having your own father try to take you out? It's terrible. And for David was a faithful friend to Jonathan his entire life. And then Jonathan and his dad were up on the top of a hill in battle and they both perished. And David found out. And David responds to this. He's finding, when he finds out, basically, this is saying, you will be king now. You're going to be king, David. Now, does he jump for joy? No. David laments so intensely that he calls on the Israelites to memorize his lament. He laments so deeply that he says, you know, this is such real pain. I want all generations to remember the depth of this pain. And it's in 2 Samuel chapter 1. He says, how the mighty have fallen in the midst of battle. Jonathan lies slain upon your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Greatly beloved were you to me. Your love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war perished. Such intense grief. It's what happens when we open ourselves up to real friendship. But the risk of loss and hurt and grief don't make friendship unworthy. The risk of loss and hurt and grief makes friendship beautiful. Jesus looked at us. He knew when he came to be one of us that he would undergo those kinds of pains. He knew that he would be betrayed by one of his best friends. He knew that he would have to lay down his life, but he came anyway. John 15:13, no one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. That love that we receive from Jesus, that friendship, helps us to extend friendship. In a world that can sometimes be teeming with people, but lacking in friends, in the sea of humanity, we can be the people who ask, who is lonely? Whose elbow do I need to grab? Church at its best does this. At its best, we are a place that nurtures true friendship, true mutuality, true friendship where we share beyond our armor, where we count the cost and go on with friendship anyway. And we don't always hit the mark. Sometimes we fall short, but there's glimpses of the beauty of friendship all the time. A Sunday school class where they've been together for 20 years and someone new shows up, and instead of saying, you don't know our stories, they say, you know where you can sit? Right here. And they pull up a chair. Sometimes I'll hear these stories from the pews where you sit with someone consistently, and then one Sunday you're out of town and your pew friend calls you and says, where were you? They take the risk of looking like a stalker just to make sure that you know you were missed. One of my favorite stories, and apologies if you've heard me share it before, but was one of these moments at First Carey where the children were moving up to the youth group, and a table of kids sort of was sitting there with that really wide deer eye look of the little kids with all these big high schoolers, and one of the high schoolers came right on up, put her arms around them, and said, I'm so glad you're here. So glad you're here. Friendship is not always easy. But it is beautiful. It is beautiful. So, let's be friends. Let's be friends. Amen.